from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Natasha Viana is a queer Latina who coped with depression, homelessness, and gave birth to a child all by the time she was 18 years old. Ricky Yen is a Taiwanese immigrant who was raised by his poor single father. And Erica Baker is a military kid born in Germany, raised in Alaska, and she's Black. What do these three people have in common? They work in the tech industry. The Techies Project shares the stories of Silicon Valley employees often underrepresented in the larger tech narrative. We hear their stories next on Forum. Join us. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. And in this hour of Forum, we'll learn about the Techies Project. It's a photography project aimed at sharing the stories of Silicon Valley tech workers who don't fit the tech narrative that tends to focus on young, white, or Asian 20-somethings in hoodies. Rather, it highlights women, seniors, LGBTQ people, working parents, and people with disabilities. It offers their diversity of perspectives and experiences that they bring to the tech sector. Since the project launched a little over a year ago, 900 people have applied to be part of the project. 100 of them are profiled at techiesproject.com. Joining me in studio is the founder of the Techies Project, along with folks that she profiled on her website. The founder is Helena Price. She is a photographer who formerly worked in the tech industry in Silicon Valley. And we're also joined by Natasha Viana. She works for Honor that focuses on senior care, and she was featured in the Techies Project. She is also co-founder of No Teen Shame, a national movement for young parents. We're also joined by Ricky Yen, founder of PRX.co, a local startup company in the public relations field, and Erica Baker, senior engineer of Slack Technologies. They are both as well featured in the Techies Project. Helena Price, I want to start with you. Tell us, what inspired you to do this?
So I have wanted to do a project like this for about 10 years now. I am really into the power of storytelling, and particularly those told by regular people that may not get into the press, who may not have their stories told. And I didn't know exactly what a project like this would look like. I didn't know what I would do my first version of this project on. But last year, it felt like the right time to do something like this, in terms of I felt like I had the knowledge to do something like this by myself. I felt like maybe I had some time and some resources that I could devote to it. And at the moment, it became clear to me that I wanted to do it on the tech industry.
And what were you hoping to accomplish?
A few things, actually. So I wanted to show the outside world that tech is, as you said, you know, not a bunch of 20-something white, straight, cis guys in hoodies. I wanted to show that it's a little more complex than that. I wanted to show that there are people who didn't necessarily go to Ivy League schools, or maybe they didn't even know about technology when they were younger, or they came from, you know, just different, possibly tougher backgrounds than other folks in the industry, and they got here, and they worked hard to get here. And from the inside, I think that some people still believed that tech is a meritocracy. That's a message that's been pushed through the industry as long as I've been in it. And that if you just work hard, you can get to the top just like anyone else. And I think it's a little more complicated than that. And I wanted to show that it was a little more complicated than that. And third, I wanted to help people in the industry that feel isolated and feel like they're different from everyone else to know that there are other people out there like them.
It's interesting then. So there are almost these dual messages of, one, the tech industry is more diverse than you think, but at the same time, diversity is still a problem in the tech industry, and people need to build community and shared experiences and express those as well. In reading the profiles on your website, and we have portraits of our guests on our website as well as a link to the Techies Project, which we encourage people to click through to get a sense of what we're talking about. You really included, it wasn't necessarily just simply by social identities of race, class. It was also, you were trying to include diverse perspectives. So it does include, you know, young white males, for example.
It does. You know, I think a problem that tech has in terms of diversity is attempting to make it a bucket solution where you can just fill a quota with a certain amount of people of a certain race or a certain gender. And it's not so much about that. To me, it's about cognitive diversity. And that is such a more gray spectrum where you can't just fill your quotas even in a photo project and think that it's successful in terms of communicating diversity. So for me, it was about truly finding 100 different points on 100 spectrums and really showing that it's more complex.
And again, Helena Price is the photographer who launched the Techies Project, which profiles people working in the tech industry. And Natasha Viana, you were one of the people that she profiled, and your life story is one that blew me away. You described yourself as a queer Latina, young single mother. By the time you were 18, you'd cope with depression, experienced homelessness, survived domestic violence, and given birth to a child. And you start in describing yourself by describing your parents, that when your parents left Brazil, that it wasn't because they were necessarily chasing the American dream.
Correct. My parents came from Brazil in the 80s because my older brother actually needed open heart surgery. And so the only hospital that was performing this successfully was in Boston. And so my parents came to the U.S. because it was literally the only thing that was going to save my older brother's life.
And they had left successful careers in Brazil only to find that one of the ways that they could make things work was by opening a house cleaning business. You wrote about a flyer that they had written that read, "We put your house to shining."
Yeah. When I found that flyer, it just made me laugh. And I showed my mom and I was like, oh my God, this is so amazing because it just tells such a deep story about how you came to America and you left these successful careers. And now you are doing something that I feel like a lot of people look at as an unskilled task or career, but you're really turning it into something that was positive and helpful to the family. And I just thought it was so cute.
When did you start to experience depression?
I experienced depression probably early in my teens. And I think a huge part of experiencing depression had to do with the fact that I had a very small family in the United States. It was just my parents, my siblings, and me. And I had left my very diverse community where I went to elementary school and started pursuing an education in a very cis-hetero white high school where I was like one of five diverse people in the school. And so it was really challenging for me to realize that the upbringing that I had and the family that I had was very different than a lot of the people in my school. And so I struggled a lot with that and also with the reality that being the child of immigrant parents came with a lot of responsibility. And so because my parents didn't speak English, I did a lot of the parental responsibilities for them. So that meant, you know, managing bills and calling phone companies to make sure that everything was all set and just, you know, helping with siblings and other people in the family.
Some of these stresses, you say, and some of the depression you experienced also made you vulnerable and probably a bit of a target of an older man who came into your life when you were in.
Yeah. So he was a few years older than me and was a really close friend of mine. And we have a decent relationship now, but he is the father of my child. I think there's the reality that when you're a young, vulnerable woman, there are people who know how to prey on that and know that they can get what they want out of you. And so that's the position that I was in, and that's kind of how the story happened.
And you were 17 when you got pregnant. What was your parents' reaction?
I was 17 when I got pregnant, and when I told my parents, they were extremely upset. For several reasons. One, it's definitely not what any parent envisions for their child. Two, they had just, you know, left a country and moved to another country where they felt like their daughter was going to have opportunity that no one else in the family has had. And by becoming a pregnant teenager, it seemed as if I was throwing away that opportunity. And then three, there was also the very real reality that my parents are Latino and they struggled with the stereotypes that came with that identity. And one of the stereotypes is that Latino women are promiscuous and that young Latinas are more likely to become pregnant or to have issues in that area. And so when I became pregnant, they felt as though I was kind of fulfilling the stereotype and it was kind of bringing shame to the family.
How did you end up in tech?
Great question. to, you know, just to start back from when I was 17, when I did find out I was pregnant, everybody basically told me, like, you're not going to finish high school. You're not going to go to college. You're going to end up, like, on welfare doing nothing with the rest of your life. These are the messages that I received on a daily basis for years. And so I had a couple of choices. I could either let those people kind of define my future for me, or I could define it for myself. And actually, it was the birth of my daughter that prompted me to really think about the impact that I can make in the world around me. And so I just actually decided to pursue my passion, and I really just wanted to make an impact on the people around me. And that passion caused me to create national movements and campaigns that would reduce the stigma associated with being a teen parent, because I felt like that was a big factor. That was what impacted my access to education, my access to resources, or even just general support from society as a parent. And so I, you know, finished high school. It was extremely difficult, but I finished high school. I graduated on time. I went to a community college. I started taking online courses, and I started volunteering at different organizations. Eventually, I worked at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, which is a top 10 hospital in the U.S., and they brought me on to develop strategic messaging campaigns that would really help push forward their idea of what health equity would really look like. From there, I worked at another organization that was funded by the CDC. We got a $5 million grant to work on a really big campaign, and we successfully met our year 5 goal in year 3. And then I co-founded No Teen Shame, which is a national movement that was started by 7 young moms to push forward this belief that every young person deserves the right to define their lives and to not really allow society to dictate what our futures will look like. And so through all of the work that I've done over those years, I was being sent around the country to talk about my work and things that I've accomplished. And how anyone can overcome adversity if they have the opportunity, resources, respect, and recognition. And long story short, in 2015, I came to San Francisco to speak at a conference and eventually met one of the executives at Honor. And
now you're officially a techie.
And now I'm a techie.
Techie, Erica Baker. I sort of heard that that was a bit of a pejorative term for people who work in the tech industry. Is that being reclaimed?
I'm not trying to reclaim it. But there are those who are trying to reclaim that term, but it has been used as a pejorative for sure.
Yeah. You've worked in the tech industry as an engineer for 15 years.
Yeah.
How did you get into tech?
So my background is kind of the opposite of what Helena spoke about earlier, you know, the people who got into tech early or who she was profiling people who, you know, didn't get into tech early. I kind of did. My mom used to work in combat plans in the Air Force, and she would have me come to her job sometimes and just like have me poke around on her computer while she was doing her work, you know, to get me out of the way. And so I started being interested in like the little what was happening on this like black and green screen. And then she got a computer at our house, and I got more and more interested in it. And I was in like 5th grade. I was living in Alaska, and there were folks who were like, we need to get kids more into technology. And so they had this little thing in the city. I lived in on an Air Force base, and the city was, you know, a population like 50,000 in Alaska. They sent me to this thing where I learned HyperCard, and I was obsessed at that point. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can do these things with a computer. I want to do more. And so I, you know, stayed with it. Started taking programming classes in high school. It was a 0-hour class, so, you know, kind of a nerd coming to school before school started. And that's how I got into it. I just kept with it. Technology has sort of been in my blood since then.
Yes, you started working as a system administrator for the University of Alaska. Yep. You worked for Home Depot. You worked for Google. What you did was write also a pretty provocative article about diversity and technology that got a really strong response, which was making the argument that while you were hearing a lot about the benefits to companies of employing minorities and bringing in diverse perspectives, you weren't finding information about what it was like, the psychological effects of being a minority in a more homogenous environment.
Right.
We heard Natasha earlier talking about stresses. Mm-hmm. Stress was a really big effect
for you. It's a huge effect. And for a long time, I was just sort of swallowing it. When I was working at Google, I was oftentimes like the only black person on my team or on the floor of the building I was in. And I didn't I wasn't aware of the effect it was having on me, because I was hearing from people outside me and around me, oh, you're working at Google. It's the best place to work in the world. You know, it must be so great. And it's like, yeah, well, if they say it's great and the news says it's great and my company says it's great, it must be great. And I work at the best place in the world. You know, I was really buying into that story. And I started going to therapy because, you know, I was also depressed. And I started going to therapy. And my therapist was like, you know, how do you process feelings? I was like, I write. And she says, well, you know, write. And I started working through the feelings of why I was like feeling so angry about life. I was really angry at that point, and I didn't understand why. And so I started processing these feelings, and I had my personal blog had, you know, me processing all different parts of my life. And then when I got to the point of Google, I was like, I should write this not on my blog, because I didn't want the traffic to my personal website. It just, honestly, I was like, well, my little web hosting can't tolerate the amount of traffic this might get, you know, so I'll put it somewhere else. And it kind of took off when I put it on Medium.
You wrote basically your observations in bullet points, and I just want to read a couple of them about mm-hmm. your experience that really struck me. You wrote, I'm constantly making micro evaluations about whether or not my actions will be attributed to me being different. I feel alone every day. I come to work despite being surrounded by people. I feel like I have to walk a tightrope to avoid reinforcing stereotypes while still being heard. Right. So it's the exhaustion of this constant thought process on top of trying to do your job.
Right. And it's really hard to do your job when you have all those thoughts going on, when you have to make those evaluations all the time, when you have to think, okay, if I say this in this way that sounds forceful, will people think that I'm being an angry Black woman? Or, you know, if I assert myself in a way that advocates for myself, will people have, you know, negative ideas about that? And you just have to like have all these thoughts going on at the same time. It just gets really frustrating.
Ricky, again, you have written a lot about thoughts that go on in your head. You even wrote an article that talked about mindset inequality, or the inequality that comes from being hindered by having your mind constantly trying to deal with an environment that may not have been similar to the environment that you grew up in. And what's so interesting about you is that on the outside, you do look like a stereotypical techie. You're a young Asian American male who went to Stanford. You are literally sitting in here with a zip-up hoodie on. So tell us, what has it been like for people to think they know you, you know, and they know who you are and your background based on the fact that people who look like you tend to share a particular background?
I think it's a privilege. I think people see me and they immediately think I'm an engineer, which I'm not. They immediately think that, you know, I might be smart, which I think I could be smarter. and they make these assumptions that honestly makes life easier.
The perks in some ways.
Mm-hmm. But what they don't see is I am thrown into an environment where I can compare myself easily, because I'm moving about in an environment where I'm working with other people, hanging out with other people who come from somewhere very different from me. So I can see how our thought processes are very different. And that's very interesting to me. That's what I wrote about.
And your thought processes are driven or by your experience. So you, how old were you when your family immigrated here? Or were you and your father immigrated here?
Yeah.
I should say your mother.
Yes. So I was 11. So I moved here, and similar to Natasha, you know, my dad doesn't speak English. So I had to do a lot of the translating, handling the bills and all that stuff. Started working when I was 14 to provide for the family. And fortunately, I got into Stanford, and that sort of made everything seem more equitable on the surface. But I think the interesting part is once you get there, the simple stuff is, yeah, sometimes you don't have enough money to participate in the same activities as your colleagues and your friends, and you figure out that you're not very prepared for the classwork that you have to deal with at Stanford. So that's the simple stuff. The harder stuff is you realize that a lot of these advantages, people are much more willing, for example, to speak their mind because they're used to.
You mean people who come from more privileged
backgrounds?
Yeah,
and they're used to discussing topics maybe you know, at home, at the dinner table, they have a lot of thoughts about what's going on in the world. They're not afraid to kind of speak out and speak for themselves.
Not afraid of conflict.
Conflict, right. And that's one of the things that I pointed out in my essay is that when you don't have a lot of opportunities by default, you tend to want to be the friendly guy and open as many doors as you can because the doors aren't open to you by default. So you're trying to please everyone. You end up being the funny guy. You end up, you know, nothing offends you, even if they do, because, hey, you know, you need these opportunities. And I think the hard part is, well, there comes a time when you have to walk through one of those doors, not just open them. You have to pick one and walk through it and then handle yourself well.
Why is it detrimental to be, say, just to sum it up, as pleaser? Why is that detrimental, say, in the tech industry, in your view?
Well, as a founder, I think we have a, you know, particular view of the world that we have to share, and sometimes it may not jive well with how other people view the world, and that's something that you have to be comfortable defending and selling. And you know, why should anyone come work with you when there are opportunities at all these other startups and companies like Google and Facebook? So you have to make your point, and you can't be afraid of confrontation.
Can you talk a little bit about what role guilt plays in your mind?
Yeah. So I think, you know, for example, I was taking the Muni home one day and then got a phone call from my dad saying that he only has, you know, $20 for the week to buy groceries. And this is after going to a meeting with an investor at the Four Seasons where a drink was $20. Mm-hmm. That was the week's worth of money.
Wow.
And that's the choice that I made when I decided to start a company. And you can't help but think about the consequences. And that overhead is constantly in your head. It's similar to a lot of the stuff that we've just been discussing, is that stress that you are constantly dealing with, and you're constantly very aware of. And that might limit yourself. Like, you might stop yourself from doing something because that might be good for the business or good for your career, because you feel like, oh, if I do that, I'm acting different from, you know, my community. Or
you're not thinking about people who are less than.
Exactly.
I see.
Exactly.
Ricky Yen, he's the founder of PRX.co, a local startup company in the public relations field. He's also one of the people featured in the Techies Project, along with Erica Baker, senior engineer for Slack Technologies. She's worked in tech for 15 years, previously worked at Google, and she's also a tech mentor for Black Girls Code. We're also talking with Natasha Viana. She's co-founder of No Teen Shame, a national movement for young teen parents. And Helena Price, a photographer who is the person who founded the Techies Project, which profiles people working in the tech industry who may not fit the traditional tech mold. She formerly worked in the tech industry in Silicon Valley. Have you worked in Silicon Valley? Are you working in Silicon Valley? Do you feel like your background is one that's ignored by the larger tech story? We'd like to hear about your experience in the industry as well. What's it like being a tech worker who doesn't fit the traditional tech mold? The number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. More after the break. This is Forum. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the Techies Project, a photography project that shares the stories of Silicon Valley employees who are often underrepresented. You can call us at 866-733-6786 to share your stories, or you can email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org. Post them on Facebook, on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. And joining us are Erica Baker, senior engineer at Slack Technologies, Ricky Yen, founder of PRX.co, Natasha Viana, co-founder of No Teen Shame, and Helena Price, the photographer who created the Techies Project. And you, our listeners, are joining us. Cole writes, I am a fifth-generation San Franciscan. Like many in the tech industry, I still live mostly paycheck to paycheck. And if not for my rent-controlled apartment, I would not be able to stay in this city that has always been my home. I'm a classically trained musician working as a classical music expert for a large tech company. Next time you see us getting off one of those evil shuttles, please don't assume we're all the same. He's referring, I'm sure, to the Google buses. It really reached a peak in 2013 because these buses were viewed as a symbol of gentrification and displacement, as I'm sure all of you are familiar. I'm curious how you felt about that protest if you were here at the time that it was happening. I remember a flyer once being circulated that got published in the media that said something like, you know, you're not innocent victims. You live your comfortable lives surrounded by poverty, homelessness, and death, seemingly oblivious to everything around you, lost in the big bucks and success. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to that? Anyone want to?
Well, sure, I'll start. I was at Google at the time when that was happening. And so I had a different perspective because I was on the inside versus the outside looking in. And I empathized with the people who are protesting, right? Like you see these big giant buses taking away your neighbors to go work in like the valley instead of, you know, having your neighbors stay and be part of the community every day. And I understand how that feels, especially when, you know, your rent is skyrocketing because these people are coming and saying, oh, well, you know, we will pay three times what the asking price is for the rent or to buy a home or whatever. And people are being pushed out of the places they've lived for so long. So I totally empathize. At the same time, like I understood like the perspective of people who are working at Google just because they didn't want to drive to work every day. Traffic on 101 is bad enough as it is. And so like the buses took, I don't know, I think that one of the companies, Genentech, has on the back of their buses, this bus takes like 100 cars off the road or something like that. And so like that, people are going to live where they want to live. And if the buses weren't there, then they would drive and that would be even worse because carbon pollution, whatever. So I get both sides of the story, but I really, you know, I really feel deeply for everybody who is being pushed out by everybody in the tech industry. I feel like we could do more as an industry to make those folks, make it so that those folks can live in the communities that they grew up in.
Anyone else want to add anything to what Erica was saying?
You know,
Helena Price.
This is Helena. I do think those die techie scum stereotypes exist for a reason. I think there are many members of the tech industry that are oblivious to where they live. We come here, you know, to benefit from the Bay Area. Like we all come here to pursue our careers and to self-actualize. And we take a lot. You know, all of us have gained so much from living here. But there are many people that seem to only take. And I think with taking does come a responsibility to be a part of your city and to pay attention to issues around you and to be a good neighbor. And so I think the lack of that is really what started this really negative sentiment towards the term techie. And so there's a lot of truth to it. That said, every issue is complicated and not every techie fits that stereotype.
And that's essentially what you were trying to do with the project to some degree, right? Just to complicate the narrative a little bit more.
Exactly. Just it's complicated.
Natasha Viana, one of the things that I read about your experience now working in tech that I found interesting is that you are hesitant sometimes to share information when you've done, you know, when you have ideas. Why?
It is very difficult to share your perspective when you are in spaces where you feel like you are the only one with that perspective. And I have often struggled with the guilt of also thinking, well, this is something that maybe I need. But when I look at people around me, like, would anyone else benefit from this idea? And we don't know that. You know, it's very possible. But my identity is, you know, very complex and layered, like so many people. And so I'm a young single mom. And so when I have perspectives or ideas, I'm bringing that background and that identity and that experience into it. But I don't know how many other young single moms are around me. And so I don't know if the suggestion that I have is going to be just beneficial to me or to several people. And so I struggle with that internally, even until today. And I think it's also even important to acknowledge that, you know, even if I feel comfortable in my work environment, like I feel comfortable in my office, I feel comfortable with my coworkers. I think the reality, too, is that you still have to interact with other companies and other people at other agencies and other spaces because there's so much collaboration that happens. And so that is a struggle as well.
Have you ever felt like this is something you alluded to where other people sometimes try to take credit for your ideas?
Yes. So I think this has existed even prior to tech in general. I think this is a problem that often happens to women of color in general, where we have incredible ideas and we we create incredible movements and they are co-opted and we are erased from it. And so I sometimes wonder if, you know, if I share an idea and it's kind of disregarded, if someone else in a position of power who might also happen to be a white male shares it, it's seen with more respect and experience, and someone with authority has just shared this, therefore it must be true. Where sometimes I sit back and I say, gosh, I recall sharing that same idea like 145 days ago. And again, this is not just something that happens like in the office, because again, you can find an amazing office, but it will happen when you are talking to other people or when you're in other spaces.
Ricky, and as somebody who runs a company now, runs a startup, and who is aware of diversity of perspectives, do you try to create a culture? How do you create a culture where, you know, Natasha's experience isn't repeated, where she can feel like not have to worry that, you know, she shouldn't necessarily share this perspective because it probably isn't shared by so many other people?
I think at our company, we I think just because of who I am and who my co-founder is, we both share similar backgrounds. I think we're all very open. And we try to celebrate the different things that different people bring to the table. And I think that's the part that is often overlooked, is that you think you have a lot of the shortcomings coming from where you come from. But those shortcomings have brought you to where you are today, working in tech, working at this company, living in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. That is success by a lot of people's standards. And that means that those shortcomings that you have done you well, have treated you well. And so what are those advantages that your background brings to the table, and how can that add to the company? And that's something that's worth exploring.
And Erica Baker, you've written about the attitudes of leadership being really important in terms of setting a tone around it all.
Oh, definitely. You know, a lot of people can work in a company and want to change things and make sure the environment is inclusive and supportive for everybody so that everybody can succeed in that environment. But if leadership doesn't share that attitude, there's not much that can be done, right? Because as an individual contributor in a company, you only have so much power to affect change in that company. Leadership has to be the one holding people accountable for making sure that the environment is safe and inclusive and welcoming for everyone.
But what is your response to people who say, well, with the push for diversity now, mm-hmm. right, it's a perk to be a person of color. It's a perk to be not. I don't know if perk is the right word. I'm just using that because I'm probably thinking of my interview yesterday with Trevor Noah, where he described sometimes being biracial as a perk. But
Trevor.
But I'm curious. It's an advantage.
I don't know that I would call it an advantage to be a person of color in the industry I'm in. I think in my life, it's an advantage. Like, I have perspectives that afford me just a viewpoint on the world that many people don't have, right? I get to operate in different environments. You know, NPR has code switch, and like that term comes from people actually like switching their language from one environment to another so they can sort of fit in. And so I think as a person, I benefit from being who I am. In the tech industry, though, I feel like because of people's biases that they come with and the biases that are reinforced in the industry, being a Black woman is not an advantage because they, you know, I get asked if I'm, you know, security or the administrative assistant or the cleaning crew or whatever. And like, I have to overcome those biases that people have before I'm able to prove myself. So I have to do double the work to get the same place as someone who isn't a Black woman.
Well, let's hear from our listeners. Les in Mountain View. Hi, Les.
Hi. I just wanted to say a note about diversity fatigue versus diversity inclusion. Our diversity fatigue is basically, it's one of the few Black managers here. There's a constant barrage of questions about whether or not this is okay, or what's my opinion, or how do we relate or include, as opposed to diversity inclusion, where we're talking about how do I make sure that there's space and opportunity for those who come after me.
Unless you work at Google, is that right?
That's correct.
And so is this something that resonates, diversity fatigue, where as soon as something comes up that seems to relate to your social identity, it's like, oh, let's go ask Natasha or Erica or Ricky or Helena.
It definitely resonates. You know, when you're in an environment where you're the only one, you have to end up speaking for an entire group of people. And, you know, Black people, Black women aren't homogenous. Like, we have various views, various ideas about the world. We come from different backgrounds. And to ask me, oh, is that what Black people believe? It's like, I can't speak for an entire race of people. It's impossible, but you're expected to, and it becomes just another stressor.
Well, Les, thanks so much for bringing that into the conversation.
Hi, Les.
Let's go now to Daniel in Pacifica. Hi, Daniel.
Hey there. I just wanted to pose a question to the panel. I'm a senior software engineer for a small tech startup in the city, actually right across from AT&T Park. And I'm just wondering if we're wasting time discussing the categorization of software engineers and people in tech in general. It seems like a wasted argument and something that we can just circle around forever. We're talking about Black women not being homogenous, but humans in general aren't homogenous. And as long as you identify as an individual, me being a Hispanic engineer, I speak to other engineers who have questions about Hispanic culture, and I don't see that as a problem of the tech industry, but the curiosity of humans in general. I'm just curious what the panel thinks about that.
Daniel, thanks. Does anybody have a response to Daniel's point?
I think there's a – this is Natasha. I think there's a quick thing to recognize, and that's the difference between choice and expectation. There are many people who feel comfortable answering those questions and being that source for someone else, but that should not be the expectation. I'm totally comfortable talking about certain aspects of my identity and culture and background, but then there are others that I don't want to talk about at all. And so I think, yeah, it's great that you are open to talking to people about your culture, but I think it's also important to recognize that that is not something that everyone else carries with them.
Well, thanks, Daniel. I want to now read a comment from Tara, who says, I'm a Caucasian female with a master's degree working in education. I've been homeless and struggled to meet my own needs due to the cost of living driven up by the crazy tech industry. I have no sympathy for tech employees struggling with psychosocial issues. All of us struggle. One of the questions I have is the sense of, okay, maybe your paths were tough to get here, but now you are making what I think to the broader public are huge, massive salaries. Is that your experience? Ricky Yin? You're now part of, you know, the upper class, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's the feeling that you have working in tech. And that's why we're, you know, trying to shine light on it.
Are you still struggling financially?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's... not everyone in tech is also making the crazy salaries that you're talking about. And
exactly.
as a founder, you have to make sacrifices, obviously. And I think what's even more interesting is learning to work with the resources to pursue the career or the dreams that you have now that you have the rare opportunity to do these things in tech. So, you know, it's really rare to be able to start a company and receive investment money and hire employees, and learning how to navigate all that is all brand new to me. And, you know, I sympathize with, and I live, I found a really cheap apartment and that's where I live. And
you've also written about how in the competition for talent, you pay your, there are times when you paid yourself next to nothing, but you paid your talent.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So much more.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, 2-3 times more than I pay myself. Right. So, and I think that's just something that you have to learn. And yeah.
Erica Baker.
In response to Tara, I would encourage Tara to zoom out a little bit and not focus directly on just what is happening right now in the tech industry. And I empathize with her, even though she can't feel sympathy for us. I empathize with her in that she can't find work with her master's degree. But zooming out a little bit, when we look at the history of the United States and every major boom that we've had, the Industrial Revolution, every major revolution, people of color have been left out. And depending on what the definition of a person of color was at that time, we've been left out. And what I work on and what I am advocating for and my major goal is to make sure that people of color and any, you know, people who are underrepresented aren't left out of this revolution, because the technical revolution is going to, you know, it's making money hand over fist. It's going to change the world, that so on and so forth. Like, I want to make sure that people who are underrepresented are not excluded from this revolution. And so when Tara says that she can't feel sympathy for us struggling with psychosocial issues, I think she called it, I would ask her to zoom out and like think about inclusion of different groups in this revolution.
Well, let's hear from Greg in Woodside. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, you haven't touched on the age discrimination. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am a person of color, and I'm now 46, and I've been in tech all of my life. And I think the age discrimination is much more potent than the minority thing. So I know that all of you have sat around a table, and you can definitely testify that, you know, there's not very many people with gray hair at the table. And so I would suggest making as much money as you can with the skill set and realizing that, you know, this is all going to be over.
Greg, thanks. I wanted to actually throw that to you, Helena, because this actually was something you were sensitive to, and you included people over the age of 50. Is that right? Was that your
yes.
goal, who work in the tech industry?
Yeah. So if you go to techiesproject.com, you can actually sort the interviews by different qualities. So you can actually filter by over 50, and you can read stories of people who work in Silicon Valley who are getting older and the discrimination that they face.
Yes. Can you share a little bit about what it was like, what it is like for folks who work in the industry who are that age?
Yeah. So I'd recommend taking a look at Kent Brewster's interview. He's an engineer at Pinterest, and he's been in the Valley since the 70s and, you know, super prolific, talented man. But he says he remembers the moment when ageism became a thing. And I'm not going to get the quote perfect, but it's when Mark Zuckerberg did a commencement speech, I think at Stanford, and said something along the lines of, young people are just smarter. Mm-hmm. And he could feel the change in that moment where sentiment toward people in the industry who were not in their 20s immediately received bias. Even when you get into your 30s, you start realizing you're the oldest person in the room. And I can't even imagine how it feels to be a 46-year-old in the industry now and being surrounded by a bunch of boys who might think that you're like their dad and don't want to interface with you in the same way as their other colleagues. It's a very real issue in the industry.
Well, Soumya writes, being an Indian American girl who's an engineer, I find myself alone in a lot of situations. Indian people write me off for being born in the U.S. and therefore not knowing anything about Indian culture. American people write me off as just another immigrant, which I'm not. Since I'm a girl, people assume I'm in sales or marketing and tend to be surprised when I'm an engineer. Alex writes, I worked at Google on the self-driving car project. I'm a queer trans person of color and didn't feel out of place. But although diversity was present, the attitude was very status quo. We assimilated in a lot of ways, and that always confused me, how normy the environment felt, how we all seemed to dress the same and act the same and talk the same. I didn't feel comfortable talking about what I believe in, which is ultimately why I quit. I felt okay and safe there, but I didn't feel that way speaking about my experience. It's something, Erica Baker, you've talked about in terms of culture. For people who are wondering why people quit, maybe they should take a look at their culture. You've given that advice to companies, haven't you?
Oh, definitely. You know, there's a saying that people quit because of their managers. And that's true for some part. But there are definitely people who quit because of the culture. Like, if you don't feel accepted, if you don't feel comfortable in your culture, that's going to take a toll on you. And eventually you're going to want to get out of that culture. And it's important for companies to realize that if they are working on diversity, they need to also work on inclusion and making sure that their cultures are not pushing the people out as soon as, like, 2 years after they get hired. You know, there's a talk about the leaky pipeline, you know, you drop out, of your company after 2 years because it's so toxic. And so you just come in and, you know, companies talk about, oh, we hired so many women and we hired so many people of color and we hired so many people over the age of, you know, 30. And those people leave after 2 years because the culture doesn't accept them and doesn't make them feel welcome and they don't feel like they can succeed.
Natasha, Vianna, what did doing this project, being a part of it, do for you? What was sort of one of the most surprising impacts it had?
Doing the project was way more helpful to me, both emotionally and mentally, in more ways than I could have ever imagined. I found myself reading other people's stories and thinking, oh my God, I didn't think anybody else in this space had a story so similar to mine, or that there were so many people who had intersectional experiences. And it just helped me really realize that there are so many people who are struggling with the same issues and feel isolated too. And it helped me connect with people who I felt really safe around. I think finding safe spaces is really important in this area. And so being able to read people's stories and know more about them and feel like I could actually talk to them about these things or just hang out with them and not feel like I'll be judged. It was just an amazing opportunity.
What about for you, Ricky Yin?
The responses has just been overwhelming. And you realize that all kinds of people, almost everyone has some kind of disadvantage one way or another. And everyone feels like there's some kind of way of thinking, a bug in their brain software, like I wrote about in my essay, where it gives them a disadvantage at this point in life. It doesn't matter what they look like, where they are, where they're from. Almost everyone feels that way. And everyone's looking for one to connect, kind of like Natasha said, just connect with other people who share similar backgrounds and hopefully find ways to overcome some of the insecurities they have, the shortcomings they have. You know, a lot of people ask for solutions to these problems. And I think that's an open-ended question that...
Helena Price, did you write that some people got jobs out of this project?
Yeah, it's been really exciting to see. I actually just wrote an email to everybody in the project a week or so ago, just following up and asking, you know, what's happened this year? What's happened since the project? Many people have gotten new jobs. Many people have gotten project opportunities, like random, really exciting, amazing opportunities. And people reference the Techies Project as how they were discovered. And that's, I was hoping that could be a byproduct of this coming out, where you've got a lot of people saying, well, we would love diverse candidates, but we don't know where they are. You know, we've looked and we can't find them. And what a nice thing to be like, here's 100. Here's a good starting point.
Well, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but Hajit tweets, thanks for finally getting to age discrimination as a job hunting woman over 40. I can't agree more. Ageism is blatant and obvious. Let's go to Jack in San Francisco. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call on this fantastic scandal project. I'm calling to seek all of your advice. I worked in politics and tech on the marketing and communications side, and my observation is that it seems like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing, and lots of misunderstanding and resentment on both sides. What can we do, individuals that work in these industries, what can we do to bridge that cultural kind of understanding gap?
Helena Price?
I would say, in general, this may not be a good specific answer to your question, but I do think, in terms of, you know, different sides not quite understanding each other, it really just starts with asking questions of each other and getting to know each other. It's a very basic, natural inclination that some of us seem to want to avoid in professional environments. But, you know, getting to know colleagues and asking, what's your story? Where are you from? What brought you to San Francisco? It may not seem completely relevant to your end goal at the moment, but it's really the best way to just start that empathy bridge and work better together.
I agree with that. Oh, yeah. I agree with that. I believe that that's something that we can do outside of our workplace as well. Just trying to get to know the people around us, especially, you know, going back to the problem with, that techies have in the community in San Francisco where they aren't behaving like neighbors, get to know the people around you, ask them questions, figure out what you have in common. Because even though we have our obvious differences, there are places where we have things in common with everybody, even if it's just at the human level. And like you said, empathize with the people around you, get to know them, and find those commonalities.
Are things getting better in the tech industry?
That answer for me changes daily. I think that it's getting, the amount we're discussing it is getting better. I think that the discussion is important. I think, though, that we are having discussions that are kind of surface level. And to see real change and real improvement in the industry, we have to be able to have those uncomfortable conversations where we talk about, you know, where we say the word racism and how that might be affecting your workplace. You know, we talk about the systemic issues in society as a whole and how they're affecting the tech industry, because we're just a microcosm of society. You know, we aren't excluded from everything that's going on in the world. And so once we start having those real conversations, the ones that make people a little bit squirmy, make them have those butterflies in their stomach because they're uncomfortable about having them, we can start getting to real solutions and we'll start seeing more improvements in the industry.
Natasha Viana, what do you think?
It's hard for me to answer that question since I've only been in the tech industry for a little less than 2 years. But I can say that, and also I feel like I work in kind of like a safe bubble where I can actually bring my daughter to work with me. But it seems as though people are still struggling with a lot of the same issues, and I'm not really sure if anything has really improved.
Natasha Viana, co-founder of No Teens Shame, thanks for joining us. Thanks also to Ricky Yen, founder of PRX.co, and to Erica Baker, senior editor of Slack Technologies and co-founder of Project Include. And thank you to you, Helena Price, the photographer who created the Techies Project. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, and Susan Britton. Our engineer today is Katie McMurrin. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and Holly Kernan is our executive producer. I'm Mina Kim. Thank you for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation.